things cost sometimes more than we think, less than we think. We're going to think about the price of things today as we carry on with our story in the Book of Ruth. And Rob is going to read the next section to us. Going to mute you all. And then Rob. Oh, no, I'll leave you unmuted if everyone's happy to stay quiet. That's all right. And then Rob.
The reading is from Ruth chapter 4, I think the first verse. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat there. When the kinsman redeemer he had mentioned came along, Boaz said, "Come over here, my friend, and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, "Sit here." And they did so. And he said to the kinsman redeemer, "Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of those seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me so that I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am the next in line." "I will redeem it," he said. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi and from Ruth, the Moabitess, you acquire the dead man's widow in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this, the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it." Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself," and he removed his sandal. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth of the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with the property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from the town records. Today, you are witnesses." The elders and those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah."
Thank you, Rob. So this morning we're going to look at the penultimate bit of the Book of Ruth. And as we do that, if you want a challenge, then the challenge today is to make, draw, design something that costs a lot, but is worth every penny. There you go. Okay, I'm going to mute you all while you get on with that, if you'd like to. Something that costs a lot, but is worth every penny. Okay. Thinking of things that cost, the first car that Simon and I bought together was a second-hand Golf from a car salesman in southeast London. And we went to look at it. And when we saw it, I got very excited because from the outside, it looked great. It was a metallic greeny colour. And what's even better is we could afford it. Simon did the whole, I think it's a man thing, looked under the bonnet and made some appropriate noises. And seemed to be okay. And then as we walked off, I said, "We should get it, Simon, we should get it now." And Simon said, "No, we should wait and we should look around and we should think a bit more about it because I'm just not sure." But, you know, I wanted to get it because I thought if we don't get it, someone else will get it. So we need to jump at it quickly or it will be gone. And in the end, we went back the next day and we bought the car, mainly due to my pestering continually that we should get this car. Now, I'm not saying that this was a bad choice or that the car was in bad condition, but a couple of weeks after we bought it, the gearbox failed completely and the garage we bought it from refused to accept any responsibility. It's true to say that we had the Golf for a good few years, but I look back now and I think maybe we should have waited. Maybe Simon was right. Maybe we should have trusted that if the car was gone, there would have been another one, possibly a better one, around the corner. And, you know, here in the Book of Ruth, as we heard from Emma last week, Boaz and Ruth are in a situation where they want something and they want it quite badly. What they want, of course, is not a car, but each other. Ruth has all but proposed to Boaz and Boaz has all but shown his desire to accept. He wants to marry Ruth and live life with his wife. But, of course, there is a problem. And that problem goes back many, many years. In fact, it goes way back to the rules the Israelites received from Moses just after they left Egypt. Rules that appear in the book of Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Rules not concerned with who you should marry, but rather with the possession and ownership of land. You see, for the Israelites in the time of Naomi and Ruth, there was an understanding that all land belonged to God. So the best way to look after this land was to split it up between different clans. People would be allocated certain sections of land to look after. What that piece of land yielded was then theirs. And when they died, their offspring would inherit this land. Now, under this system and the rules of Moses, if someone became poor and had to sell their land or give it up, the relative who was nearest to them was responsible for redeeming what they had sold, paying the right price for the land so that they can look after it. Now, of course, in the case of Naomi, we know that when she and Elimelech, her husband, left Bethlehem with their two sons all those years ago, they gave up their land. We're not told exactly what happened to it, whether it was sold or whether it was simply left to be looked after by others while they were in Moab. But what we do know is that that land is still there. It seems Naomi is the legal owner, but she doesn't have the means to keep it or use it. And so now, according to the laws in Leviticus, before anything can happen, this land needs to be redeemed. And along with the redemption of the land also comes the responsibility to look after Ruth and Naomi too. This again goes back to a long ago law that Moses brought to the people of God. Originally, it referred to a man taking on the responsibility of his brother's wife if his brother died. But due to the circumstances in Naomi's family where there are no men left, the spirit of this law would call for the redeemer of the land to not only pay for what Elimelech owned, but also to look after the women in his family who are in need of protection too. Now, Boaz longs to do this, and he wants to do it now. And to be fair, he probably could have rushed into it like I did with our car. I mean, it had been so long since Elimelech had left for Bethlehem that if Boaz had gone ahead and redeemed Naomi's land and Ruth with it, probably no one would have questioned him. But having informed Ruth that there is another who is more closely related and being a good man of noble character, as we've seen throughout this story, Boaz instead goes out to find the family guardian or the kinsman redeemer, the closest living relative to Naomi at that time. He's well aware that this may mean he risks losing what he desperately wants. But Boaz is willing to do this if it means that the right thing will happen. He's willing to trust God. And so he goes up to the town gate and sits down, most probably because at some point during the day, most people pass through the town gate. And so if he waits long enough, he's bound to see who he needs. And so it's no surprise that as he's sitting there, the family guardian, the kinsman redeemer, appears. We're not informed of this person's name, but we're told that he sits down to hear what Boaz has to say. And that initially, he is amenable to the proposal. He's probably heard about Naomi's return to Bethlehem. He may well know of her plight and the land which she owns, and he responds positively. The price is right, it seems. He can afford the land. And what's more, if he adds this land to his own, he will get more profit and a greater inheritance to pass on. It seems to the family guardian that this is a win-win situation. So he readily agrees to take on the responsibility. But then Boaz informs him about Ruth, Ruth the widow, the Moabitess, the foreigner who came back with Naomi, the one who the guardian would have to commit to look after as well. And what's more, the one who would become his wife and have his children, which would ultimately ensure that it's Elimelech's name that remains on the land rather than his own. And suddenly the guardian is not so keen to redeem the land. He thought he was onto a good thing, but now he sees that actually it's going to cost him far more than he thought and may even put a strain on the resources he already has. The price, it seems, is actually way too high. And what looked at first to be an easy deal has now become far too great a commitment. Do you know, a little while ago, I got an email from John Lewis. They were asking for feedback on their performance, if you'd bought something from them, and they wanted me to fill in the questionnaire. And I was like, well, why would I want to do that? And they seemed to preempt my question by saying, if you enter and you fill in the questionnaire, you will be entered into a draw to win £200 in vouchers. I thought, brilliant. All I have to do is fill in the questionnaire and I might get £200 in vouchers. I'm in. So I signed up and I opened up the questionnaire to begin. And the first thing I was told was that the questionnaire was 30 pages long and would take me 45 minutes to complete. And I was like, no, you're joking. I quickly changed my mind. John Lewis could keep the £200 because at that moment in time, with all the other things I had to do, it just wasn't worth it. And this, it seems, is what the family guardian decides about Ruth. He was fine with buying the land. It would have taken little time and effort and all the reward would have gone to him. But when he finds out that actually there is a lot more commitment involved, that there are women to take care of, that there are children to look out for, that there is an inheritance that won't even be his, nay, he's reluctant. Because to be quite honest, this situation doesn't benefit him. He was happy to help when the cost was small and the benefits were worthwhile. But when it seems he might get more heartache than it's worth, when he realised that actually this commitment might put risk to the things he owns and has worked hard for, he's quick to back out. Because at the end of the day, he feels he needs to look after himself before he looks out for anyone else. And you know, in many ways, this is fine. After all, Orpah made the same judgment call back in chapter 1 when she returned to Moab rather than come to Bethlehem with Naomi and Ruth. She was not criticised in the text for this, and it doesn't seem that the family guardian is either, because sometimes we need to look after ourselves before we look to care for others. But at the same time, the response of the family guardian also highlights that deep desire within ourselves to live life by putting our own interests first. That desire to make sure the price is right for us, the cost is affordable, that there is not too much sacrifice on our part before we're willing to step in and lend a hand. After all, this way of living is a lot easier. And it's what worldly wisdom holds up as sensible and right. Help others, but make sure to first look after yourself. And yet, if we're to follow the example of Jesus and the teachings of the Old and New Testament, this idea that says we are to think of our own interests above those of other people really is an alien concept. Paul in the book of Philippians tells us to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, he says. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the other. And this, of course, is only after Jesus has called his disciples to deny themselves and take up their cross to follow him. Or if you like, to follow his example of servanthood and sacrifice. Not living life for our own gain or even with one eye on protecting our own lives, but rather living lives to serve others. And not so we gain reward, but quite simply because this is what love looks like. Or as Paul says to the Ephesians, follow God's example and live a life of love. Just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. You see, the family guardian may remind us of a way of life that is all too familiar and all too justifiable. Protect yourself. If it doesn't benefit you or protect your assets, don't risk it. And in some situations, this is 100% what we should do. But if we follow Jesus, this should not be the formula by which we live our life. And it's certainly not the example that he gave us to follow either. We're going to take a few moments to pause now as we think about the actions of the family guardian, the kinsman redeemer, actions which may seem sensible, but also portray in him this desire to protect himself. And whether there's times when we do that, not necessarily whether we act on that desire, but whether we do have that desire to put ourselves first, to keep our lives safe and secure before we think of others. Going to have a moment to just pause as we reflect before God on those things. And while we do, we're going to play the song, O Come to the Altar, as we offer our lives to God again, maybe asking him to help us to live life serving him and serving. Of course, in contrast to the family guardian, Boaz is willing, in fact, more than willing, to do all he can to help Ruth and Naomi. Of course, it helps that he wants to marry Ruth. It helps that he's wanting to do this because then he's happy to risk his assets. He's happy to take on a wife. He's happy to bring children into the world who will inherit all that he has. He's not been asked to do something he doesn't want to. But nevertheless, we shouldn't underestimate what Boaz does here, because once the family guardian has turned Boaz down, taken off his sandal and said, buy it yourself, or if you like, once he's freed Boaz from the law that requires the nearest relative to redeem the land, Boaz announces to the elders that he intends to take the responsibility of the family guardian. But he doesn't simply announce that he's going to redeem Naomi's land and with it Ruth. Instead, he announces that he'll redeem Naomi's family as well. The family that had left God's land to go to the land of their enemies, the Moabites. And so before the elders and all the people, Boaz makes his promise to buy from Naomi the land of Elimelech, her husband, and Kilian and Mahlon, their sons. He names the whole family. And then in front of the elders and all the people, he announces that he'll also take Ruth the Moabite to be his wife. He will not simply do what the law of Moses requires, but instead he will choose to align himself with the widow, the foreigner, and the rest of the family. You see, it seems Boaz is not afraid of the comeback he might receive from the Israelites. He's not afraid of the hardship his relationship with a known enemy will cause. He's not afraid of the social ramifications of his promises, because he's not in the least concerned about himself and his own welfare. Instead, he's thinking of the interest of the other. And in so doing, he not only redeems the land, but he also ends up redeeming the whole family as well. As the elders in the town pronounce a blessing and invites Ruth to play a vital role in the house of Israel, one similar to those before her who had contributed to the family line, whether they be Israelites or not. And this, of course, as Emma reminded us last week, is exactly what she does, becoming the mother of Obed. Obed, who then became the father of Jesse, and Jesse, who became the father of King David. Until eventually, if we follow the family line through, we get the birth of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. But of course, none of this, not the redemption of Naomi and her family or Ruth's vital role in the family line of Jesus, would ever have taken place if Boaz had followed the idea that he should think of himself before making sacrifices for others. It was a risk that in the end turned out well for him. And in a similar way, if we're to live for God, putting our own interests second should be a risk we're willing to take too. It may turn out well for us, or it may not. But maybe along the way, if we do this, we will find that amazingly, we too are involved in some redeeming of our own. It's a challenge, but it's something that we may be willing to accept. And so as we conclude our time together, may God bless us and may God walk with us. And may God continue to teach us what it is to live life like it. Amen.